Well, thank you for coming, and I know that one of the great issues that we have today in sharing the information about creationism, and it's a very scholarly kind of subject, and we think about ways in which we can present it, and many, many times people ask questions, is there any way we can get onto secular college campuses? And I have tried it, and with some success, and I'd like to talk to you a little bit about that today as we talk about how to share creation on secular college campuses. I use as a model of an approach to scientific minds or scholarly minds or philosophical minds the approach that Paul had when he went to Athens. And to me, that makes logical sense. Think about the account in Acts 17 where Paul encounters philosophers, both Stoic and Epicurean, in their background. And in both cases, they had a tendency to be skeptical of religious people, shall we say, and especially those who talk about supernatural events, things that were not easily explainable by virtue of reason. It was the Greeks. You might even call the Greeks as sort of the proto-scientists of the world. They were the first ones to discard narrative as a reliable source and went virtually entirely on reason, human reason, to try to come up with worldviews and ways in which they understood their universe. So they were skeptical of the stories that the gods had built the world in this sort of way, and so they just elevated human reason and human research. So with that kind of audience in mind, we take a look at the story of Acts 17, and it says, while Paul waited for them in Athens, his friends, his spirit was provoked within him when he saw that the city was given over to idols. Now, may I suggest to you that he was provoked in the sense that God was not receiving the proper amount of respect and honor or recognition for the fact he was the creator of all things. He was bothered by the comparative lack of understanding and knowledge about this. It provoked him. And I'm wondering, do we carry that same amount of zeal, shall we say? Are we worried that the great institution of the world is primarily leave God out of any picture, any worldview, any cosmos understanding at all? Maybe we should be a little bit more provoked. Anyway, Paul was provoked. It bothered him as he saw these various conflicting worldviews around him. And it says, then certain Epicurean and Stoic philosophers encountered him. And some said, what does this babbler want to say? All right, so apparently he was talking about his worldview. Then Paul stood in the midst of the Areopagus. He was invited to speak to them, and he gave this approach. He said, men of Athens, I perceive that in all things you are very religious. For as I was passing through and considering the objects of your worship, I even found an altar with this inscription, to the unknown God. Therefore, the one whom you worship without knowing, him I proclaim to you. Now, notice what he does. He first of all, notices that they are interested in understanding the great questions, the great dynamics of the universe that they were living in. They were trying to come to some understandings. He was acknowledging that, and he also kind of carefully said, and you're even willing to admit you don't know everything. You have an altar to an unknown God. Let me see if I can maybe fill in or help or add to the discussion, and let's see if we can come to some understanding. Here's my understanding, Paul goes on to say, on the great worldview that is reality. God, who made the world and everything in it, and that's a creator God, strong creator God position, since he is Lord of heaven and earth, does not dwell in temples made with hands, nor is he worshipped with men's hands as though he needed anything. Notice he's starting to say, he's challenging them and saying, your ideas of God are rather small, or rather human engineered. They're kind of in temples and everything. Let's expand our view of God. Let's think of how large this universe is and what a great God it would take to create it. And he doesn't really need, you know, to be put in temples. Truly, these times of ignorance God overlooked, but now commands all men everywhere to repent because he has appointed a day on which he will judge the world in righteousness by the man whom he has ordained. He has given assurance of this to all by raising him from the dead. Now, what takes place at this point? At this juncture, it says that some scoffed, and then others believed. And what was he challenging them with? He was saying that there is a greater dimension. There are things that can't be explained by science. There are things that have been witnessed there is, shall we say, a narrative that you should take very seriously. There are witnesses that have seen someone who was dead who is now alive. And that's not scientifically supportable, but it is supportable by narrative. And take and consider this as a possible source of good and reliable information. Of course, Paul probably gave his own story of how he had seen Jesus himself, and so on. So the idea of trying to balance it, give it more information, talking to a philosophical world, a scientific world, with the idea of, let's face it, this universe is great. There may be forces larger than we fully understand. Let's consider some other options. It's not a terrible approach as we think about the society in which we live. These are the questions, no doubt, that were challenging them as Paul spoke. A divine being that made heaven and earth, a creator who gives and actively maintains the life of all creatures, in other words, is connected now with his creation, someone who can't be properly represented by man's reason or art. You can't contain him in a temple. He's much greater. He's beyond your ability to, frankly, contain him in a laboratory. A God whom we are responsible to. A divinity above natural laws. He can resurrect people from the dead. Above natural laws and fully capable of suspending them at will. This would have been probably a challenge to a Greek mind and certainly to a scientific mind today. Well, as you think about the three angels' messages, then I saw another angel flying in the midst of heaven, having the everlasting gospel to preach to those who dwell on the earth, saying with a loud voice, fear God and give glory to him, for the hour of his judgment has come. Worship him who made heaven and earth, the sea and the springs of waters. A reference to creation, a reference to the flood. To me, we are, in these last days, say with a loud voice, wherever that takes us, maybe even in Athens, a loud voice about our Creator God and our God who judges the world, has done it before, will judge it in the future. Expect this kind of God to re-enter Earth's history in a big way. All right, the great issues have to do with the way you see the same data. And if we can ever get people to agree that the data is a separate thing from interpretation, boy, we've got things we can talk about, common ground. It depends upon the glasses through which you look. And whenever you present to a science-oriented community, I think you can resonate a little bit with them if you can help all of us understand that there's data and there is interpretation. Very often, the data is presented today the interpretation is presented as data, millions of years or whatever the issues are. So that is the area. Now, to debate or not to debate, when you want to go to a college campus, traditionally, I think we've probably been involved with debates. A number of people I know here have been involved in debates. I've been in debates. And there's possibly a place for that. I'm a little cooler about debates than I used to be. I'm not so sure it accomplishes quite as much as we'd like to think. It's certainly entertaining for some people. The old Adventist approach to evangelism was debates. We'll go into a town and debate the local preachers about who's right or wrong from the Bible. So maybe it's ingrained in us, I'm not sure. And debate is sort of scientific and scholarly and everything too, but in terms of accomplishing things, I'm a little cool on debates, but maybe people can convince me that that's the way to go. I think better, since the evolution, arguments are presented 24/7 in all venues in secular campuses, To split up time in debating, I don't know, why not just go in and give a different approach that they never get a chance to hear and leave it to people there? Not that you would avoid questions, but leave it to them there to consider. Now, the proper venue on a secular college campus, the way you would find a place is hopefully you'd be invited by a group to come in and talk. Hopefully an Adventist Christian Fellowship, if they're registered as a registered group on the campus, can invite you in. You are therefore an authorized visitor. You get access to the campus facilities. You can put up posters that are approved and so forth. And so you really need to work through channels when you do things on a college campus. Best way to do that is to be an invitee. So find a group that you connect with. If it's not that there's not an Adventist group there, Adventist group of young people, find a non-denominational religious group. There's lots of them on campuses. Find somebody that'll invite you, and you'll have a way to get started. Now, the best approach is, incidentally, not to wear a tie like this. In the beginning, God. That immediately categorized me as religious, you know, and put me in a box and take me a while to get out of that box. So anyway, what you want to do is you want to come in and approach the subjects of origins in ways in which you can be as polite and kind to all views, because all views in these arguments have a basis, have a logical basis and approach to things. Now, and that includes evolution, has a logic to it. And if I can suggest it to you in just this way, if you understand evolution fully, it's basically the best game in town, or even the only game in town, if you set aside the option of God creating things. If you put God out of the picture, then what else do you have? There's almost no other model or theory that's going to work, and so that's why it is supported as the logical approach. If you understand that, understand the basis for evolution, then you can talk well with other people. Now, to me, a really good approach to this is to just go through a history of science and religion and how they used to be connected, and what were the forces that separated them, and just do a history of it. And you can talk about humanism. People aren't offended by talking about humanism, how that kind of encroached Western culture and the universities and so on. And if you put down a historical chronology of things, people can kind of relax, I think, and listen to the rest of it. And so that's where we are today kind of thing, because this is the history. Now, when you talk about polls and American beliefs, that's good too, because that's undeniable. If you were to say to a scholarly crowd, we understand what the basic science model is, you know what Americans or Westerners or whatever culture you're in believe, present that as a cold hard fact, you can say, and here's where we have conflicts. And they can't deny that. They, you know, when you tell them, this is what you teach, this is what most people in this country believe, and you can see why the problem is conflicts on origins, it's undeniable. Just go with facts and try not to spin them too much. Possible topics. Well, do you do a full-blown, here's how we got here series? You can do origins, you can do a history, science, religion, conflicts. You can give overviews, just do a survey of beliefs and so forth. And there are ways of doing this. And you can drop into the discussion seeds that you can use later on. And let me talk a little bit about that. Something like Darwin, anything involving Darwin is great. Darwin is the man. We just celebrated the 200th anniversary of his birth and the 150th anniversary of Origin of Species publication. The universities are very open to things on Darwin. Why not go in with some issue involving Darwin, how he became agnostic or how his views were received in his days, how they're received today. The social implications of Darwin, and be careful on that you don't tell the world that everybody who's an evolutionist is something like a modern version of Adolf Hitler or something, trying to improve the gene pool through things. And so you got to be careful on that. You can talk about hell, because the world is interested in the subject of hell and what happens in the end, basically. It's remarkable. And you can talk about Darwin's view of hell, which it was very, very painful to him, very painful to him to talk about, and kept him away from Christianity, at least one of his arguments. So you can talk about a lot of spiritual things with, shall we say, the packaging looking like a science discussion or a history discussion or something like that, and open the doors to other things. Let's face it, if you talk about origins, you can talk about Big Bang, and then from then on you can talk about what does science say it's going to, how it's going to all end. And there you can get into prophecy and so forth too, if you can work it that way. So anything Darwin is really good as well. Now understand this, that you will have scoffers come in the last days. According to this text from 2 Peter, scoffers will come in the last days walking according to their own lusts and saying, where is the promise of his coming? For since the fathers fell asleep, all things continue as they were from the beginning of creation. And one of the interesting things that you hear from agnostics especially is that if there was somebody who could predict the future, then I would want to listen to what they had to say. That sounds a little supernatural. That sounds a little bit hard to explain otherwise. Well, how about this text predicting the future from Peter's day, 2,000 years in the future, saying that in the last days they'd be scoffing over the issues of origins. There'd be scoffers. And they would be, in particular, using the concept of all things continue as they were from creation or from the beginning, without any interruption, without any influence of a divine God, without any supernatural actions, but just, and I mean that is gradualism, that is uniformitarianism, that is science's view of how things continue. The present is the key to the past. Understand that things continue without the intervention of a God. And they will use that to counter any comments about a second coming. They will scoff at a second coming because God hasn't stepped into history. For this they woefully forget that by the word of God the heavens were of old and the earth perished, being flooded with water. These two things they forget. And at some point in the discussion you can mention this, not the first day, not the first meeting, but somewhere along the line you can say, isn't it interesting that we have these issues being talked about today with lots of people not thinking that God created the world and not thinking that the flood took place. It's interesting that here's a prediction that would be exactly the topics here 2,000 years after it was talked about by Peter. So this also should tell you that there will be scoffers that come into any meetings that you have. The way you should maintain yourself is always polite, always kind, never bashing, never attacking evolutionists as somehow being short on IQ or gray matter or something. They are not. They just have another worldview, and you need to treat that respectfully and kindly, and you will build some bridges and make friends, and that is what it's all about. Seeds will be planted. We've had some good success with seed planting with some. One professor I think of in particular, a Korean gentleman, who is teaching now in a university in Texas, was definitely influenced by a creation seminar we had over at Washington State University, and considers me now a good friend. We talk regularly on email on things creation, and he tells me, Stan, whenever you do another series, don't forget there will be one like me there, so don't feel like you're not reaching anybody. And so there are people out there. You get graduate students who come up and say, I'm not sure, and then they have this image of creationists as being sort of narrow, back where people don't understand the issues, don't understand science, and so forth. And when you can laugh with them and joke with them and show them that you do understand the basic tenets of evolution, you do understand what it's based on, and here's where you have the issues, here, here, and here, and just maintain a nice rapport with them, it's amazing how far you get. And afterwards, they kept coming up every meeting a little warmer, a little friendlier, a little more open, and would tend to hang around you a little bit more. And you could tell you were building bridges for the things you were saying. Seeds will be planted. It's a rare day that you'll have somebody stand up at the end of a series and say, I'm now a creationist. Thank you very much, you know, Stan, for all of this. It's never do it publicly. You want them to go away and think about the things that they saw and heard. And at that point, of course, you are all dependent upon prayer, because there's not a single argument that you and I have that can argue somebody into heaven. It is strictly a spiritual transformation that is done by the Holy Spirit, and you are just providing what you know, but you pray God will make that germinate into something special. It is entirely a spiritual matter. And having said that, I'll have to tell you that my observation is this, that even though it's a scholarly pursuit, even though there are a lot of things that have to do with facts and data and everything, to some extent, I still rather feel that it is not a data-driven issue for people. I still think that at some level, or at least it's not entirely data-driven, it's still to some extent a spiritual issue, with people wrestling over what does this mean in terms of me with this God. What does this mean for my future? What does this mean in terms of relating? What does he expect of me? All those kinds of things come as part of the train that engine is pulling. So there will be scoffers, but there will be seeds planted. And we can trust that God will make something great happen from this kind of presentation. Yes, even in a secular area like that. Remember in Athens, Paul had some who did believe, and a church was formed. Even though I think he was hoping for more, he still got some very precious souls to accept and become part of God's young church there in Athens. It can happen today with the message God's given us. Thank you.